Well, hello everyone. Welcome to another show. I'm here with Scrump and Evelyn again.
Hello.
Last time we were talking about organising piss-ups in breweries and so on. If you can't do that.
Yes. Piss up first. Politics second.
Yes.
Today we're going to be talking about the neutral frame. Why don't you guys... Oh, well, first of all, where can people find you?
That would be Scrump Monkey on YouTube, Anti-Politics on Substack, and if you so wish, because you're very cool and you need it, you can buy our book, Why Have You Not Bought It Already? Why have you not bought two or three? Come on.
Whifflings.com, the independent publisher that we partner with, who are also part of the Shieldings organization and the Beowulf Foundation and all that, who do good work. Thank you to Mr. Consumer for keeping all that running. You're very practically skilled.
Yes. But I don't know. Would you like us to get the ball rolling with this one then? Or?
Well, I do need to remind people to pick up a course at the academic agency. buy several of those courses, all of them, if you buy
all the courses.
Don't buy the Trivium. Actually, buy them all separately.
You can buy the mega bundle. That's the cheapest, most efficient way.
Why would you want people to do that?
Well, if you did it in the most inefficient way, you'd give me way more money.
Some of you out there need to buy the courses as financially inefficiently as possible as a wealth flex.
Yes.
Andrew takes it. No. Buying the mega bundles poor coded. You need to wealth flex.
There was a guy once before who just gave a pile of money and bought every single course available, and then never did any of them. That did happen once. So you know. If you want to be like that,
If you want to be as cool as that, doesn't buys courses, doesn't even look at them. What a chad! You know why? Because he didn't need any of them. That's why, and that's why he gave you all the money because he already knew.
I'm picking up a lot of static on your mic, guys.
Okay. Let me try something. Oh, is that any better?
A little, yes.
No, you getting echo at all?
I am getting echo, yeah.
Getting echo? Yeah. How?
Okay, I think it's
fine. We're on headphones, so... are you getting echo still?
No. Okay, it's good. Right. It's good.
Okay, are we a lot better now? Sorry about that. You can probably... Cut the technical faults out. I think we might have had a cable fucking wiggle there. Stupid USB cables.
Listen, in my lo-fi aesthetics, maybe I'll keep them in that authentic...
No, thing. No. Good. Well, we try not to have too much tech boomerism. We try to sound at least acceptable, but
neutral frame.
Well, the neutral frame is really all the things that we consider apolitical in politics, what we consider neutral and normal. It's kind of, it's the negative space of politicized issues. There's the things that we talk about that are hot button issues, but there's the real trick of managerialism and the liberal frame in general is all the things we all agree on. And when you look at all the things we all agree on, those are slightly shuffled about between story arcs, but most of them stay the same. The issue we've been allowed to talk about has been things like the trans issue, but there's been really no discussion at all about inflationary economic policy, or at least not as much. It's that kind of thing. It's that we accept that there must be a central bank that prints money and buys debt. And that's not contentious. You know, that's seen as often libertarian quackery is talking about things like central banks or, you know, just a bit boring. And the neutral frame is very good at containing most of the boring things, too. Being boring is like a superpower in politics. If something is boring, it's actually probably quite powerful. If something is a foundational stone that we don't talk about and is very boring, it's probably one of the more important things you should bone up on, because the headline red meat, quote-unquote, sexy issues that we're allowed to talk about, that we've been talking about in these previous segments when we talked about, you know, the base being over and all that, those are the things that we're allowed to debate.
I think I've worked out what the background noise was. Don't you hear it moving?
It's the Overton window.
It's
the anti-shake's not letting us do it. That's annoying.
But I think it is a sort of considerable point. It's that there's a number of issues which people chop and change between, and they move around all over, and it's oh, it's this, it's that, it's novel, it's not. And there are a subset of it, you know, banking policy.
There we go, that should be.
To a large part, really, other than very tepid oppositions to it, the Equality Act. I mean, who's against the Child Poverty Act or the Modern Slavery Act?
Nobody.
These things are non-political. They are things that we all agree upon. How do you shift the Overton window on those? The answer is you don't. And there is, I suppose, another point to this as well, that when you do step outside of the preset issues, to take something on the boundary and to declare it non-political and to declare what your opponent is doing as political is, I think, one of the most effective things you can do. I mean, we know this is the sort of Tony Blair 101 move. Turn around and go, well, I'm not being political about this. That's my opponent's problem.
The Tories are politicising this issue of child poverty, you know.
Mm.
We have to have...
One of the things I've noticed, cause, you know, I've been listening to an awful lot of LBC recently, and the way conversations are framed on LBC is always in terms of the government want to do something, and the conversation is, are they doing enough? In fact, we saw this a little bit with the lockdowns, right?
Yes.
It was like the government want to do it, but they're not doing it enough, right? There's a whole conversation happening at the moment on banning social media for under 16s, banning social media for under 16s on LBC. The framing of it is never, should we do this at all? But are these measures going to do enough? So the question is already answered in the way it's debated. Mm. It's like it's foreclosed. Everybody knows it's already a problem. The real question is, to what extent does it need to go, and is enough being done? That is a way that they manufacture consensus, because if you're out having the LBC call-in show, one of the things I've noticed they do is they get the punters, they get the members of the public to make the case, which then manufactures the consent.
Yes.
On a whole range of different things, and they are already happening, i.e. Parliament is about to vote on it next week or something. So the whole exercise is basically just talking about the boundaries of what, you know, of what's already being done. And then in the other direction, something like assisted dying, right? They don't want to have that debate because it's already happening. The problem there is the House of Lords are holding that up. And so what do we need to do to reform the House of Lords? And, you know, currently they're using the whole scandal with Mandelson as a pretext to make it easier to remove Lords, to modernize it so that they can't do things like hold up this assisted dying bill, right? Because, you know, that's outdated, that's outmoded, we've already decided to do this, et cetera, et cetera. This is how every conversation goes on that channel, regardless of who the host is. So I find that whole process is interesting, because the neutral frame is kind of hidden, because so many issues are already foreclosed. They're already pre-decided, and the whole conversation takes place in this. I mean, COVID's the best example, because during COVID, no aspect of the anti-lockdown or anti-vaccine or skeptic position was allowed into the discourse at all. It was purely Tories are doing this. Are they doing enough? They need to do more. That was the whole spectrum of the entire COVID era. So anyway, I'll let you guys come back in.
Well, I was going to say, I find one that's very interesting, which I think is actually the inverse of what you're talking about there. That they will give tacit agreement to the fact that, right, okay, we do need remigration, but we need to decide who's going to go first before we do it. So instead of it being the conversation settled and then you have the consent manufacturing, you have, well, we're not certain. And then you have almost like consent demanufacturing as it becomes an internal block of people who are deciding whether or not someone's relative should go, as opposed to a monolith that all turns around and goes, says they've got to go back.
It's defanging it by re-politicising all the little elements within it, while still, I suppose, in that kind of way, turning and going, well, we can see the reason why you'd say this, but we need to make sure it gets done right.
That is the big thing, is when something is accepted as reality, in quotes, when they talk about, well, when Keir Starmer basically did his weird immigration speech, basically doing his minor send them back dance, as they've been practising for a while, he really killed the issue by doing that in many ways, because it really becomes a debate about process. It becomes a debate about whether or not the managerial state can send them back. And then you get into performative failure. Even if something is highly political and highly controversial, there's a lot of, we tried that and it failed, with a lot of ideas. It's like that with everything in politics. There's a lot of, well, the argument will always be, if something looks like a bloody obvious solution, is, well, we tried that once and it failed.
Mm.
And that becomes a neutral position then of, well, this isn't a political issue, it's a practical issue, you know? Well, we'd like to do that, but... And you have these various phases of haggling, but the fact that immigration has been too high, in quotes, is now a neutral position. If you look at the communications coming out of the Labour Party, they have conceded that point entirely. And so that completely chops the legs off.
It's been neutralised.
Yes.
closing the name, really.
It now becomes an issue of governance. And when it becomes an issue of neutral governance, which is what people seem to think a lot of what government action is, then you can't talk about it anymore. And really, we try and eliminate large parts of the neutral frame, as the problem with most conservative politics or libertarian politics is that they just concede 90% of the neutral frame automatically because they just don't see it. Again, it's a fish-water thing. It's the political heuristics they've been brought up with their entire lives. And they legitimately think these things are neutral and normal. It's where a lot of leftist deconstructivism comes in, because they have to let their activists know that some of the stuff that the proles believe isn't actually real. That's what that's part of. They have to actually deprogram their own people a little bit. with the leftist critical theory stuff, and they go, no, the neutral frame isn't real, all things are political, and then they move from there. But it is this trick that is pulled on people, and they go, well, you know, welfare safety net is, you know, it's a settled thing, we need to have a welfare safety net, and therefore all you're doing is haggling about who to allocate resources to. And that's how these arguments all end up just not falling apart, because the government goes, well, what do you mean by send them back? And then they have 1,000 of their own voices come back with their sock puppets and go, oh, no, it means this. And they go, oh, well, the economy's collapsed, we can't afford it anyway.
It's the ability as well to narratively make it seem as if you are at the behest of something. We have now entered a phase where the British government is at the behest of its own immigration policy. Something that it did itself, willfully and consciously, for over a decade throughout the Tory party. But now it's at the behest of this. It's able to turn round and paint itself as this sort of powerless institution, but all-encompassing when it's required.
Yeah. Can anything break this kind of consensus engine, this consensus bubble? Because, again, listening to LBC, which is where I hear the most normie politics talk, okay? And, you guys talk about shifting the Overton window. It is incredible how little the, based world makes it into LBC. It is hermetically sealed off from what you see on your Twitter timeline completely. No callers, no talking points, nothing. It might as well be 2014 in LBC world, okay? But I heard
racists.
I heard Nadine Dorris, okay, who is now a former MP. She used to be a Tory. And she came on, and she was talking to Andrew Marr. And she said, oh, well, the thing is that Nigel actually wants more female MPs. I've really been impressed with his opinion on, women in politics. And, you know, it was like, so many discussions and talking points and that take place in based world, okay, are already foreclosed from entering into this new reform party that Nigel Farage is literally recreating the Tories, replete with their Tory liberal feminist talking points and all the rest of it. I mean, it's remarkable. And of course, the interviewer was Andrew Marr, who completely embodies the liberal frame. So how, like, is there any possibility of breaking the, of puncturing the bubble, or getting in there, or disrupting any of that? Or is it just immune from, online discourse?
Even if we lived in a situation where there was something approaching a left-right split, I think Andrew Marr would have asked Nadine Dorris, you're part of Reform, and one of their parts of their you know, panels, or what you call it, one of their main things is about free speech. But you backed the online safety bill and were responsible for drafting part of it. How can this be? But Andrew Marr's not going to ask her that, because it's just not relevant. It's not the point of question of the day.
Yeah, I think the point really is that you have to undercut the whole LBC thing in its root. You've just got to go, what, you watch LBC? Okay, take your medicine, granddad. You know, what are you, some kind of boomer? It's like, really? LBC?
Guy radio.
It's just like, what? Good Lord. LBC. And that's the power of kind of political cool. That's, again, we talked about this in another, well, the other episodes that we've just done, but it is the point to turn around. You don't undercut people by arguing with them about what they've seen in LBC. They go, okay, granddad, watched LBC, did you? that really is the most effective counter to it. It's like, what are you talking about? Andrew Marr, is he still alive? It's that kind of stuff. LBC is not relevant, and going, no, I don't watch LBC. I have a pulse. That is how you undercut this argument, is to go, that's really uncool, and I don't want to hear your uncool opinions from your cringe LBC episode, so please be quiet about that. That really is the only thing I found that counters middle-class people who want to endlessly talk about these things. It is just to give them the okay boomer, really. It's to make them feel like they're bringing up an incredibly, like, passe thing at a dinner party, and they've been caught being the one with the boring opinion at the dinner party.
But at the same time, the neutral frame that we're talking about that moves everything forward, right? I mean, the LBC in a way is the endless conversation, right?
Yeah.
And it still chugs along. Still all these things. I mean, regardless of what happens in online politics or what people are talking about, Nadine Dorris is there. The same policies are talked about. The same agenda moves forward again and again and again. So
people in online politics have it backwards. You want a permanent agenda with a narrative of the face of it that can shift in any way, shape or form it needs to be. It can appeal to anyone and it can take any form it needs to, providing that the agenda behind it is permanent. What we have in the online right is a subset of people who want to stick hardcore to one narrative and one narrative only, and attempt to apply as many different agendas as they can to that. And it doesn't work.
No, it's counterproductive. And I think the problem is that LBC is just like, it's profeed. It actually is just like slop. People listen to like the radio and stuff, and they don't absorb it all.
It's Jeremy Vine.
It's Jeremy Vine. It's mostly noise to them. And the thing is that what LBC says is just there to occupy space. It doesn't actually matter, really. What you have to find is the people who matter, the people who are actually maybe slightly maverick inside this machine. And you have to talk to them directly, as in either one-to-one or over the, you know, Zoom call or whatever, or ideally face-to-face. It actually is about like getting in rooms and like struggle sessioning minor officials about the fact that the country is falling apart on their watch, and what are they going to do about it? And LBC really is there to just put old people to sleep. And the whole point that I would make is that, well, if there were to ever be a change in elite opinion, what would happen is that LBC's talking points would shift overnight. LBC is malleable. It's noise. It's background noise that soaks into many people, but it is just noise. And so shifting the neutral frame is actually very easy once you have power. You can't shift it without it, but shifting it once you have power is extremely easy. But it's about convincing people who actually matter, who are on this interface between elite and non-elite, that they have been lied to, and that they look like fools, and that things are falling apart on their watch, and that we've noticed. That's really it. And my whole, what comforts me about the vomit that LBC spews is that what LBC thinks doesn't matter. And the thing is, people know that. They know that the content of the conversation is a lot less influential than having the conversation and framing the conversation. Again, people wouldn't be able to describe to you what they consider, you know, neutral politics if you asked them, because they wouldn't understand what you were talking about. It's this thing that people, they accept it. It's all top down. And so the neutral frame is interesting because it gives you a snapshot of what people are supposed to believe and what the instilled instincts of the population are supposed to be.
Yes.
But it doesn't always work. Large parts of the neutral frame by the ethnically British population are totally rejected. Most people who are not, like, middle-class female middle managers understand that racial differences exist. They have to. People on the sharp end especially do. But that's outside of the neutral frame. It doesn't matter that it's outside of the neutral frame. And really, it doesn't matter really if the neutral frame is full of all these lies. In fact, it actually benefits them. It benefits people if they're constantly railing against things that they're portraying as neutral and normal. It's about politicizing it. It's about making it seem like it is, well, really what it is, which is not neutral, not normal. But embodying that is very difficult, and that's why we say that people online can't, quote-unquote, red-pill the normies, because what you're coming up against is their entire life's worth of, quote-unquote, neutral programming.
Blind spots.
Yeah, you're telling them that the sky is purple, up is down, black is white.
Yeah. Grabbing people in the street and, like, shaking them vigorously and going, don't you think it's a problem you can only access housing through the intermediary of usury and predatory lending? They're not going to...
No?
You might as well have spoke foreign.
You've got to get to work, excuse me.
Yeah. So it doesn't work. You can't break that. And that's a big part, again, of, I think, what we mentioned in the first little segment we did about Based is Over and the conservative given. Is that it's just a given. People don't question the fact that one of the only ways you can go and get decent, high-paid technical work is working for the military-industrial complex. In some way, shape, or form. Tends to be where most of these folk end up. But we don't question that, because to do so would require people inconvenience in their life. The momentum that they've built up for years in maintaining whatever they're up to requires staying where they are and not thinking about the fact that they're creating weapon systems to blow up kids in Gaza or something.
Do you see any potential for Andrew Marr's world, since we've talked about LBC and the kind of bubble that all those people inhabit? Almost all of which is played out in the neutral frame, okay? In our lifetimes, or in the next 10 years, or in the next 20 years, being, like, completely shattered or melted or destroyed?
No.
It's being consolidated as we speak.
If anything, they're getting stronger narratively as they're getting weaker materially. What's going to stop that is the lights going out. It is the general decay and disorder that is taking hold in Britain and most of the Western European nations and most of what we would consider the American Empire. What is going to kill them eventually is decline. But until decline gets them, or they are dislodged by a stronger elite in some sort of freakish act we can't foresee, which I don't really see on the horizon, I think we have got 10 years more of this. And honestly, I think that's not a good thing, but it's something we can plan for. I think there needs to be acknowledgement that this neutral frame is out there, it exists, but a lot of people with maverick tendencies are disgusted by it, and they find it, you know, bizarre. You have to find the people who reject it already, because you red-pilling people is a bad idea. Getting people to reject the neutral frame who aren't already prepared to is a bad idea, because they end up with no reference points. They end up reliant on you, and quite often they just make terribly bad conclusions, like the boomers going full David Icke. Most people do not have the capacity to see outside the neutral frame because they are the descendants of peasants who were told how to work.
And that
is it. There's nothing wrong with that. 80% of people must follow orders or else society falls apart. But you have to acknowledge that 80% of people are just meant to harvest grain, and what they think about politics not only doesn't matter, asking them about politics is kind of cruel. So I think most of political organisation will be leaving people where they are, because most people who buy into the neutral frame are just politically useless by definition.
So there's not going to be a civil war. There's not going to be total mass remigration. There's not going to be... Nigel Farage is not going to fundamentally reform the country. You don't see the prospect of any of these things happening.
But what I was actually going to possibly even suggest there is that we can see the importance of making things seem sort of neutral, and that David Betts' whole Civil War idea, he isn't actually describing any radically different circumstances from the one in front of us now. Maybe some of his speculation about arms and stuff is a bit, don't see that happening. But really what he's doing is describing the status quo in new terminology to make people think about it slightly differently than they did before. And all they're really doing is sort of hardening sort of old partisan lines that they want to keep lined up because it's convenient for them. So you're either part of the smelly leftist brown world order or you're part of the cool Chad Zionist world order. Pick your poison.
The problem we have is that managerial government turns very slowly. Even if the people in charge did agree with us, in many cases, they often struggle to figure out how to steer their own ship in a way that doesn't mesh with the current course we see. A lot of we talked about the Labour Party interfacing better with the civil service. That's because they're obviously just a government enlarging party. But if the unwieldy size of government and the amount of immigrants coming in genuinely becomes a problem, which it has, they don't really have much of a solution to that. In fact, some of Keir Starmer's problems are because he's been trying to move a little bit in a slightly different direction for survival reasons and found himself completely unable to. The neutral set course of politics on autopilot has become a problem for the people who set the course, in many cases, to the point that the creation of political energy as quote-unquote base stuff has become important to them. It's become important to hijack other people's movements because everything is so boring and neutral, it's very difficult to get political energy themselves. That's why I always tell people to be very, very suspicious of getting themselves involved in political activism, because quite often it's just the establishment trying to give itself a shot in the arm, because they are creaking and dying and decaying. And that's why, you know, the NHS doesn't work. That's why the roads aren't paved properly. That's why the power grid's getting weirdly unstable. And that's why our standing in the world is dropping, because these people are incompetent and don't know how to do things in many cases. But because they've created this course that is so non-deviatable, this is why nothing ever happens. It's because partially because making a giant bureaucracy change course takes energy and our leadership is completely run out of it.
Scrump, at least give me the potholes. He's going to fix the potholes. No.
The potholes will continue until suspension improves.
But I think it's something that people are just, again, another complete and utter blind spot. The will required to actually make the British state or the American state move in a direction that it isn't already going in is unbelievable. I mean, that was what I read as part of your whole point in telling people that remigration wasn't going to happen. Not that it's not feasible to move millions of people out of Britain and that it's not a right thing to do or whatever else. It's that fundamentally, is there a single individual who has the competency and political will to make the arms of the British state do it? No. When he comes across he or she, whoever it may be, I won't discriminate. Yeah, show yourself. But until then, it's not going to happen. And it's, as you say, it's the need for the quick fix or the simple solution so that you can then have a conversation about it and then feel that you're part of the process. I helped. I did my part, my civic duty, when nothing's happened.
The problem with building this self-reinforcing system that, you know, the checks and balances, as the liberal theorists describe them, are really just a method of making sure that nothing happens. Mm-hmm. It's a machine that goes nowhere, all imperfect balance, which means it doesn't move, which means it continues on its current course. And that really, demolishing that is a generational project. It is something that is, you know, we're going to have to reckon with. And even there are even people who really, really do want to do something and are in positions of relative power, and they just find the ship too hard to steer because the neutral position has become so big and the set of neutral facts and the neutral course has become so set that they can't make even their own little area, even with quite a lot of power, deviate from it. It's become this giant suicide pact almost among the international elite.
Very interesting. I mean, what about, just before we wrap up here, I don't know if you happened to catch Mark Carney's speech a couple of weeks ago at Davos, where he basically said, like, look, the international order, as we've lived it, you know, it's kind of been a lie, right? It's a polite fiction that we told ourselves, but now we're going to live in reality. He called it, I mean, he was so close to being there. You know, I call it value-free realism. He said it's values-based realism. I was like, oh, not the values again. But Mark Carney, on paper at the very least, has got Canada into net negative migration for the first time pretty much ever. He has, you know, done quite a lot of deportations. And he's done it remarkably without the slop right being on the map at all. I.e., there is no reform. There is no Trump. He's done it without the slop right there at all, without making a song and dance about it, without Based World. He's just kind of quietly and efficiently made it work. And at the same time, he is presenting to the world, as he's saying, like, look, we can make this work if we just have enough will and so on. Do you see any prospect for Carney World? Right? I mean, Starmer has been inept. Starmer has not been able to do it. Carney looks like the apprentice Blair always wanted to me. Can it work?
I'm afraid that Mark Carney is a company man. He's always been a company man. And a lot of the numbers that you're seeing in Canadian immigration are a fiddle. They're still bringing in hundreds of thousands a year. They're just letting visas expire like they do over here and then pretending those people have left. In fact, there's going to be a huge amnesty probably in Canada at some point, unfortunately. Because of that, it's also a repositioning because America and a lot of other countries have painted themselves into a narrative corner with China. And really, this is about admitting that as America declines, that other countries like Canada are going to have to lean more on China. It's about softening up the Canadian population to accept more Chinese goods because, well, that hedges against America. Same thing with Keir Starmer in China. Keir Starmer's gone to China as well and done a bit of Carneyism himself. But if you look at Mark Carney's investment portfolio, it is almost entirely in America and these large American companies that benefit from the American Empire status quo. So this really is just another layer of kayfabe. Mark Carney, former governor of the Bank of England, is not somebody who is running an insurgent political movement. He's able to make himself look like one. He's able to move things a bit more than other people are because he exists in this kind of like semi-neutral frame and is saying these things that are real and seem shocking. But the only implication really is he's like with the whole Greenland thing. That was a threat of war to advertise a stupid international club that everyone forgot about. The whole Mark Carney end of the international order thing is just him trading more with China because they're going to need to buy more Chinese cars, because everyone is. We're going to have to buy loads of Chinese cars in the UK. They've already planned it out. We're going to see thousands of them coming over the next few years. And that's what this realignment's about. America and China are stuck in a death spiral together. Their economies are completely integrated if you look at them. They are, you know, client and subcontractor, but each needs each other. China needs America to buy their crap, and America needs China to make their crap. But without either side of the equation, the two fall apart. China needs America, America needs China. So I find this clash of civilizations narrative baffling because they are completely locked together and have been so since the early 2000s. Quite alarmingly, actually. The two cannot fight each other credibly. It would be a bizarre thing to watch America and China actually try and get into conflict with each other because they would be punching themselves in the face.
Yeah, I mean, I took Carneyism to mean basically we're going to try to do the regime without America. We're just going to try to do, you know, we're going to try to do globalism without the USA now. Is this just delusional?
They can't. They can do it with a slightly diminished role, but that's an admission of reality. It's not that Mark Carney wants to trade less with America. It's that America is legitimately just a weaker trading partner now.
Interesting. Okay. All right, well, look out for the neutral frame when you're watching TV or you're listening to your radio, or, I mean, ideally you wouldn't do any of those things. I've my phone is broken. I just refuse to change the station on my car. That's why I keep on listening to LBC all the time. But I've kind of got used to listening to see what bullshit they talk about
Stockholm
each day.
Syndrome. I obsessively read the BBC website because certain bits of news only pop up in certain time windows and there's interesting headline changes. But honestly, it's one of the better ways to figure out like what people are supposed to be thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you do it with the binoculars, like, fascinating. So this is what this class of people is supposed to believe. Fascinating. Yeah, that's why I look at the news.
LBC is interesting because, look, yeah, it's prol-slop, right? But it's not, it's like, you know, the real prol-slop is a station called Talk TV. That's your ITV with Anton Deck, right? LBC is a little bit more for your BBC Two type class, right? Your Google industry manager or something might be listening to
it. Farage used to have an LBC show.
Yes.
I think he did at some point, but he has been. He is
network, whatever it was.
He's now on GB News, but it's kind of like, I mean, this is LBC is where James O'Brien is, and you know, Andrew Marr and all these people. And what a lot of it is it's basically into M25 consensus manufacturing. That's what it's consensus manufacturing for those people who are the middle. Are like, a lot of the people there are, I mean, it's kind of boring managerial talk, a lot of it. And that's kind of where, like, for example, I said, they're going to use Lord Mandelson to reform the House of Lords to push through assisted dying. Why do I say that? Because that's the exact conversation they had, not just once on, actually, I listened to it twice, once in the morning with Nick Ferrari, once in the night with Andrew Marr. If they have the same conversation, that's a pretty big signal that this is what's going to happen, right?
So the BBC is good for that because you can see stuff that was in white papers years ago, and you're like, okay, this is finally happening now. This is finally being brought out to the public, and we're going to debate it now that it happened 3 years ago.
Who needs a House of Lords when we have a Council of Nations and Regions and an interparliamentary whatever?
Yeah, they want to put all the mayor. They want to put all the mayors. They want to do away with the Lords Temporal and the Lords.
10,000 Soviet bus councils, comrade. Yes. There will be more democracy.
I mean, this was all the stuff we looked at with that bloody New Britain document all the way back in, what, 2022 now?
It is. It's everyone always, because the whole people's understanding of politics is so shallow that I mentioned Soviet democracy and they look at me funny. And they mentioned the fact that in the 1920s, the Soviet Union had far more democracy, in quotes, than the West had in general. Mostly because they smothered their population with it. And that's really what's coming is 1,000... Imagine a bus council debating the timetable forever.
my trough runneth over.
My trough runneth
over. Hey, there could be a chance where you could become lords one day, sort of, as a kind of bus driver, a bus driver lord in the year 20...
Is he intermediary before you talk to the car kings?
That's what you've got in the Soviet Union, though. You'd be like, oh, sorry, comrade. I just was promoted here because I never really stabbed the one in the back and I just used to run a bus council. I don't know what's going on.
Well,
and then
it's actually...
like, wait a minute, why is the guy running the army the guy used to be in charge of the bus council? It's like, well, he's kind of harmless.
So the guy used to run Glasgow City Council. His only work experience previously was working in an ice cream van.
And that's what they do, though. These people just get promoted from nowhere who are basically like janitors.
When I was reading about the Soviet Union, it's actually fascinating how Stalin used all of that stuff because he, you know, we talk about the high, low, middle mechanism. Mm. He called it power from below or democracy from below, right? Where he basically put the middle managers in a struggle session where the proles who were given these little, you know, seat in this body or that body. They basically stayed to the struggle session and the middle manager, the commissar, would just have to sit there and take the criticism of the workers. Okay. And if they had a problem, they could go to Comrade Stalin who could sort it out. You can imagine this is the mechanism that, so that's how he was able to say this is a functioning democracy. Okay. Even if the talking points of the criticism were fed to them or whatever, it looked like it was coming from below. It's a very fascinating...
This is why Liz Truss is doing 15 years in the podcast gulag.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But anyway, where can people find you guys?
YouTube, the channel Scrump Monkey.
We are still the Scrump Monkey YouTube channel where we do our streams on a day of the week.
Yes.
we also them because we're quite busy, but we do have the Anti-Politics Substack, which at the moment is a bit dormant, but we do have the book Anti-Politics Volume 1 on Whifflings Publishing, who are, again, who are an excellent independent publisher, and they are a good bunch of folks and friends, so if you want to support us, do buy book, for it has most of what we want to say, at least for now.
Yes.
I'll just remind people, I'll pick up a course at the academic agency. Do you know, I'd love that job, to be the guy who organises the struggle session.
Oh, that's what I think.
That would be an absolutely fantastic job to have in Stalin's Russia, but anyway.
You can read Reddit
10 years think tank.
Yeah.
I'm making you the assistant to Winston Marshall. No!
Anyway, thank you for having us on, though.
Yes, thank you.
Bye, guys.
Toodaloo.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.